Rock, and I'd like to welcome you to the Sun on the Strip podcast. I'm the entertainment writer for the Las Vegas Sun, and I'll be your guide to everything that's happening in entertainment this week on the world-famous Las Vegas Strip. This is my first show of 2020. It's Wednesday, January 8th, and it's CES week. The annual Consumer Electronics Show is the biggest convention of the year in Vegas, and basically everything is packed. Don't worry, that won't keep me away. I'm hitting one of my favorite resorts on the South Strip to celebrate its 10th birthday in this week's Spotlight feature, and I've got an interview with one of the best-known headliners in the city and one of my favorite performers, too. But before we get to that, let's do some news. There's already been a handful of new musical residency shows announced for 2020, and two of them open this week. Keith Urban is playing a series of shows throughout the year at the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace after reopening that venue with a weekend set in September. He'll perform there again on the 10th and 11th and the 17th and 18th this month, and then he'll be back in April. And the House of Blues, home of longtime resident Carlos Santana, brings in David Lee Roth for a sort of mini residency starting January 8th. 10th and 11th this week. He's back for a bunch of shows in March. This one could be a lot of fun. I think Diamond Dave is a great fit for Vegas. He can do different kinds of songs and stretch far beyond his Van Halen stuff and his kitschy 80s solo hits. I'm planning on checking that one out soon. Paula Abdul wrapped up her Forever Your Girl residency at the Flamingo Showroom Saturday night. If you go back to my Thanksgiving episode of The Sun on the Strip, you can listen to my interview with Paula, who would love to keep playing Vegas and probably wants a bit of a bigger room to do so. Her show is 2 hours long and packed with layers of production and costume changes. Of course, a ton of dancing. It seemed like a success at Flamingo, so I'm not really sure where her show could go from here. I don't see it moving into one of Caesars Entertainment's big rooms, either the Coliseum or Zappos Theater, but who knows? I bet she comes back this year at some Caesar property. A couple of other big concerts recently announced. Kesha brings her High Road tour to the Pearl at the Palms on May 1st. Tickets go on sale this Friday, January 10th. And this bigger one is not on the T-Mobile Arena website just yet, but Justin Bieber is on for a show there on June 2nd. No word on ticket sales yet for Biebs. Run at Luxor, Cirque du Soleil's experimental action thriller that opened in October, has cut back its show schedule this month. It went from playing twice nightly, Wednesday through Sunday, to an 8 p.m. show Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday, and a 9 p.m. show Friday and Saturday. It's not unusual for a new show to tweak its schedule like this while it tries to find the right rhythm, and February will bring a return to the twice-a-night schedule at 7 and 9:30 p.m. nightly, except Mondays and Tuesdays. There's quite a bit of internet gossip that Run is struggling and could close, and right now the show is only selling tickets for performances through April. But the Review Journal reported on Monday that a Cirque spokesperson said the company is constantly honing the show's content and reviewing the schedule, and there's no confirmation about the long-term future of Run. I seriously doubt the show would close this spring just because of the size of the investment in developing and creating it. It's more likely that it might close temporarily for some reworking and some changes. Remember, Viva Elvis, that was a Cirque show most people consider to be a big swing and big miss when it opened almost 10 years ago. That show still ran for more than 2 years, so I don't think Run is going anywhere just yet. And speaking of new shows, I spent my weekend at the Jets 80s and 90s experience at Planet Hollywood, which I wrote about for the Las Vegas Sun, and Bellagio's new Mayfair Supper Club, which I wrote about for this week's issue of Las Vegas Weekly magazine. So read up. Both of those are a ton of fun. On the food front, a few strip restaurants opened over the two-week holiday stretch besides Mayfair, which I noted in my new Sunday food column, Taste Trends, so go read that soon. And another big one was announced. The Flamingo is going to debut Bugsy and Meyer's Steakhouse sometime soon, in the first part of the new year. It's going to be where the former Center Cut Steakhouse used to be. The name and the vibe are clearly a nod to Bugsy Siegel and Meyer Lansky, who first opened the Flamingo in 1946. So you know there's going to be a speakeasy vibe and a hidden bar and some vintage photos accenting the glamorous decor. It actually sounds a bit similar to what I experienced at the Mayfair. So maybe let's call this a restaurant trend with the tableside preparations and the vintage era design elements. But I'm excited about Bugsy and Myers because I really like the Flamingo. I like the shows there. And now there will be a legit place to eat there, too. And Caesars Entertainment didn't just, you know, grab a celebrity chef to do a steakhouse concept. They came up with their own. So I'm looking forward to hanging out there and drinking an old-fashioned there very soon. And lastly, if you partied on the Strip for New Year's Eve or watched the party on TV, you probably noticed the new lights on the Luxor. The pyramid-shaped resort recently installed LED vertex tube lights up and down the four corners of the building, and they show off a variety of color schemes from dusk till dawn every night. The system features 276 lighting tubes that can produce more than 16 million color combinations and a variety of patterns. I remember when Luxor first opened the esports arena there, I talked with the executives there about how it's definitely the right place for such an attraction because the Luxor kind of seems like something in a video game already. And now with these lights, that's even more the case. It's got a very cool look, and I bet it will become one of the most Instagram buildings on the Strip this year. But what does Carrot Top think of the Luxor's new lights? I had to ask him when I did a checkup interview this week. I talked to Carrot Top on Monday all about his recent extension that's going to keep him on stage at Luxor and keep his audience laughing through 2025, which will make 20 years performing there, more than 20 years. He's a Vegas legend. I love his show. Everyone should see Carrot Top if you haven't already. He'll definitely surprise you and give you more than you expected. This interview is going to run in an upcoming issue of Las Vegas Magazine, and you can read it at lasvegasmagazine.com. But here's a little extra just for you.
And I'm looking back on it, when I started Vegas in 25, 6 years ago, I never imagined, not only, you know, definitely didn't imagine be having this kind of stay power. And Vegas in the very beginning, when I first came here, was very, I was, you know, of course I was a lot younger and I really wasn't ready for, it's hard to describe this. Like the Vegas crowds, they're different. It's a different kind of audience in Vegas as opposed to what I was used to on the road during shows and, you know, clubs or venues that people would come, you know, specifically to see me, you know, get babysitters and hire, you know, wait months for me to come to their town. And they would go see the show and they would be, you know exactly what it was. They were wearing their Carrot Top shirts and stuff. And when you started playing Vegas early on, it was, you know, you were just a side show in a sense earlier on. You know, they couldn't get into a Cirque show, you go see Carrot Top kind of thing. So, or they'd find out about you maybe, or, you know, there's still fans that were built in that would say, oh yeah, we saw you in Omaha. Now we're going to go see him in Vegas. But this is, you know, years ago. So I didn't really have that. It was kind of harder for me, I think, in the beginning of my days here. And then I became more comfortable with how to work a Vegas audience. You know, they're from all over the country and all over, I mean, world, really. We had people last night, you know, that were right front row that were from London, or we had, you know, people from, you know, all over the world, you know, that come. So you're entertaining an entire, you know, diverse crowd as opposed to when you go play, you know, Sacramento kind of thing. So it was, it took a while to kind of get used to that and how to work it and kind of make the show in a sense kind of work for everyone, you know? So it's taken some years to come to get it down to, it's a good show for Vegas in a sense that I think there's all the bells and whistles. I mean, there's music, there's props, there's stand up and smoke machines and wind machines. But in a sense, it's kind of a rock and roll kind of show.
I really love the part of your show where you're just doing stand-up. It's just you and a mic, all the props and the cues kind of take a break for a few minutes. And
yeah,
I think that part's a bit of a surprise for like your first timers in the audience too. Is that portion of the show important for you as a performer to sort of break free of whatever expectations people have?
Yeah, I mean, part of it is because I want to do it just for myself, and then part of it was also kind of the show, like, yeah, that I can do more than just, you know, what people sometimes think, that just you fill a guy with props, and then they come to the show, and they go, wow, you know, he actually told a story for a half hour kind of thing. And it's fun for me. Yeah. I've always wanted to do that. So this also, this show has given me that luxury to kind of do that. I think, working every night in Vegas has given me the chance to kind of get more comfortable and work in some of those things. Like you just said, like take a risk and just kind of tell a story. And yeah, I like that too. I mean, I have comedian friends that come and they always say the same thing. Like, dude, you're not a prop comic. You're a stand-up comic. You did a whole, you know, you did a whole routine where you didn't touch a prop for a half hour. I'm like, well, I've always thought that, but I've never really cared that people labeled me a prop comic. I just have always thought, you know, if they saw the show, they might consider it to be more than just that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very lucky that I've been able to do this and stay this long and have people coming out. It's a true blessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't really think about it until I was kind of prepping for this interview, but I guess you've really spent kind of half of your career performing in Las Vegas.
Yeah, literally. Yeah.
Does that strike you as a strange phenomenon? Or
I'm sure I never did think that happened. In fact, when I first was offered a room, I was kind of reluctant in a sense. At the MGM, I used to do in and out. You know, I was there for 2 weeks, then gone on the road, and back for 2 weeks, and then on the road kind of thing. When the Luxor offered this full-time thing, I was reluctant taking it, not knowing that I would be able to pull it off or wanted to pull it off. I was thinking, you know, I'm a road guy. I'm not a Vegas guy. And looking back on it now, 15 years we've been doing it, it's like I can't imagine going back the other way. It's just, we still do some road shows during the year, but definitely not the amount of shows that we do in Vegas.
What do you think about those nifty new lights they just put on the Luxor? Pretty nice of them to upgrade.
Beautiful.
It's
beautiful. I told the president just last week when I saw him on New Year's Eve, the whole big staff came, the big brass came out of the show. And I told him, I said, that is beautiful. I mean, it really makes a difference. You really see it. Yeah. Surprised they hadn't done that years ago. Yeah.
This is going to be a pretty big year at Luxor, not only because you guys got the new Cirque show downstairs, but obviously with the stadium opening very near
right
to the hotel. And I know you're a football fan. How do you think the Raiders and the NFL and that venue are going to impact the Strip and impact Vegas this next year?
Well, I mean, no one knows. That's the mystery of this whole thing, you know, but I guess as a resident of Vegas all these years, and a fan of sports in general. I mean, you can see what the Golden Knights have done to this town. We're all praying and hoping that the Raiders do similar, you know. I can't imagine, of course, not going to bring in a lot of people to Vegas every weekend. And being right there by the hotel, hopefully it's going to be, you know, it's going to create a lot of energy and more people in town and more excitement. Especially right where we're at right there. So I can't imagine not doing, you know, being very successful.
If those tranquil sounds of running water are familiar to you, then you probably know that I'm at Aria. This week's spotlight is all about Aria, which turned 10 years old in December, almost a month ago. These waterfalls are a prominent part of the resort's grand entrance. It's kind of the last casino resort built with a big grand entrance. We'll have to see if Resorts World brings that trend back again. But Aria opened in December 2009, about a year before the Cosmopolitan next door. I think the finer features of Aria were probably lost in the incredible hype about City Center. We don't really hear the word City Center very much anymore. MGM Resorts doesn't really use it to describe this cluster of buildings. Aria, the hotel and casino, is definitely the foundation of City Center.
But at the time, that was one of the largest real estate developments ever created in this country or anywhere else. Obviously very expensive and kind of controversial because it opened when it did, right when the recession was just killing Las Vegas. So maybe Aria wasn't really appreciated for what it was, which was kind of the greatest hits of casino resorts that MGM had in its stable. It definitely had all the prerequisites for a successful mega resort at the time. You know, celebrity chef restaurants, a theater for a Cirque du Soleil show, a huge casino, thousands of luxury hotel rooms. And then it also had the benefit of being in City Center and being flanked by the shops at Crystals, Vidara, a boutique hotel right behind Aria that does not have a casino, the Mandarin Oriental, which has now become the Waldorf Astoria, the Veer Towers, which are residential buildings, and of course the Harmon, the tall blue building that never opened and has since been taken down. But all of those things together made Aria, I think, something special way back when it opened. And I've always been a fan of this place. I've spent a lot of time here over the years, and it has changed quite a bit. So really the whole reason to do the spotlight on this podcast is for me to wander around these spaces on the Strip that I love and love spending time around and kind of share those experiences with you and show you why I love the Strip so much. And Aria is one of my favorite places to just walk around, look at everything there is to see, chill out in a lobby bar or a casino bar or lounge and appreciate the design and resources that went into creating this crazy place. Aria is just one of the best places to do that overall. And one of the reasons for that is its incredible art collection, most of which have been here since the place first opened. Some of the better known pieces are the big crazy Nancy Rubens kayak thing between the Aria North Valley and the Vidara main entrance, the Jenny Holzer installation with moving messages down there on the bottom level of that valet where the Jewel nightclub is. The Cool Mile Inn Colorado River silver sculpture behind the lobby. And I also like the Henry Moore reclining form sculpture that is right behind the lobby, outside in between the area between Aria and the shops at Crystals. There's so many more cool installations to check out at Aria and at Crystals. Obviously, art is becoming a bigger thing at casino resorts on the Strip these days, and art tours are happening, and I feel like Aria was really the first to do that. You know, Cosmopolitan gets a lot of credit for being artsy and edgy and having those unique, memorable moments just kind of situated throughout their building. But I think Aria did a really good job of doing that in its own way back when it first opened. And like I said, I still get a kick out of wandering this space and taking it all in. So one of the ways that Aria has changed the most over the years, as you hear CES crowds murmuring behind me, is how it's transformed into more of a complimentary place, I guess a business destination, as opposed to just being a place for entertainment and leisure. Most notably, the theater where two different Cirque du Soleil shows, Viva Elvis and Zarkana, both opened and closed. That entire space has turned into an expansion of Aria's meeting and convention areas. And now it has a pretty massive amount of convention space. And then with the recent development of Park MGM and T-Mobile Arena becoming a strip hotspot, Aria has picked up some steam because of that, the events at T-Mobile, and you know, being a place where you can move between these resorts if you're going to see a big event at the arena or a big show at Park Theater. I know Aria has also become a place where locals will park when they're coming down to the strip to see a Vegas Golden Knights game. But I think that that has happened, in my experience, just anecdotally being down here, I think that's happening more to the south. MGM Grand and Excalibur and New York, those resorts seem to be getting a lot of that local parking push for hockey, which is why I keep parking at Aria every time I go to a Knights game. It's very convenient. Restaurants have always been a big deal at Aria. I feel like it's always been in the top three, top five resorts on the Strip in terms of overall restaurant portfolio. And I love how the places to eat here are kind of arranged in these cool little pockets. So where I am right now is one of the best little pockets you could ever find on the Strip. Upstairs, in front of Michael Mina's Bardo Brasserie. Right next to it is Jean-Georges Steakhouse by Jean-Georges Von Richten. And then the very popular Carbone Italian restaurant from New York City. Carbone and Bardo are both kind of new, been around for a few years now. Jean-Georges has been here since it opened, although it has been renovated and refreshed at least once in a big way. Bardo Brasserie used to be an exceptional seafood destination, but got switched into this even better French brasserie. And Carbone was Sirio from the Maccioni family of Le Cirque and Circo, two restaurants. They opened a Bellagio. Sirio, of course, the patriarch of the family, so the restaurant was named for him. Carbone is a bit more lively of an experience and has been more successful in that space. Also up here is Herringbone, a coastal restaurant from Chef Brian Malarkey. And then downstairs, right off the lobby, you've got another three restaurant pocket with Julian Serrano Tapas, Ketch, and Sage. Ketch is the newest one down there. That space used to be Bar Masso when this place first opened. Julian Serrano, one of my all-time favorite strip restaurants, is his tapas place here at Aria. Of course, the chef known best for Picasso at Bellagio. When Aria opened in 2009, it was also kind of the last big push for an era of nightlife in Las Vegas that was dominated by the Light Group. That company had several venues at Aria when it opened. The Hayes Nightclub. I think they were doing a casino bar lounge thing as well. And they also had a steakhouse where Javier's Mexican restaurant is now located. Light Group had so many venues at different MGM properties at that time that it was an obvious move to expand that partnership as well at Aria. But a lot of changes in the nightlife industry and different hospitality companies merging and buying each other put us where we are now. The club is open here. It's called Jewel, and it's run by the Hakkasan Group. I actually love Jewel. It's not one of the biggest, and it's probably not one of the most popular clubs on the Strip, but it's really cool. I think it's really cool. I especially like the VIP rooms upstairs that each have their own theme. Now I'm downstairs in yet another restaurant pocket. There's actually only two down here. Blossom, one of my favorite Chinese restaurants on the Strip, and Lemongrass, which focuses on Thai and Southeast Asian food. There's also a really cool little, there's a baccarat room down here, and there's also a pretty swanky little bar that I like to hide in from time to time for a quiet drink. Blossom, I think There's been no announcement about this. Blossom could be on its way out, and that's because Din Tai Fung, the very famous dumpling house, is going to open this year in the space where the Aria Cafe currently exists. So we'll see if Aria needs to retain its fine dining Chinese restaurant once Din Tai Fung comes aboard.
What's like the most popular burger?
Ones, I would say it's the first five. So Crunch Burger, Down Door, Bobby Blue. Also the Burger of the Month, the Canadian Burger. It's really popular too.
How many people actually add potato chips on their burger?
Most of them, they want to try it. Right. They really add taste on it. And it's more feed, so.
I think I'll do the Bacon Crunch Burger.
Bacon Crunch Burger? How do you want it?
Medium.
Medium.
And can I do a pistachio shake too?
You want to add whipped cream on top?
No, thanks.
So it may not be called City Center anymore, but this area around Aria is still scattered with other stuff worth checking out, including one of my favorite burgers in Las Vegas at Bobby's Burger Palace. It's Bobby Flay's burger chain, and it's really good. And I just had a burger yesterday, so I really shouldn't be doing this, but so much for New Year's resolutions, I guess. Bobby's Burger Palace is right on the strip, next door to Starbucks, in front of the Waldorf Astoria. That hotel still has the great Twist restaurant in it, as well as the 23rd floor bar and lounge with great views of the strip. And then, of course, there's Crystal's across the way, the one of the most luxurious shopping destinations in Las Vegas. Has a few great restaurants in it as well. Cucina by Wolfgang Puck and Mastro's Ocean Club. So, congratulations on 10 years. Aria, still looking good after a decade. I'm going to go eat this burger.
Okay, it's time for your weekend rundown on the Strip. Keep in mind, of course, that you can always find extra entertainment options and ideas every Friday in my Best Bets column at LasVegasSun.com. There's not a lot of big stuff going on this weekend. As mentioned at the top of the show, David Lee Roth opens his residency at the House of Blues at Mandalay Bay, and Keith Urban does the same at the Coliseum at Caesar's Palace. Drag Diva Brunch also opens Saturday at the House of Blues, and the Vegas Golden Knights play Columbus at T-Mobile Arena on Saturday. In the clubs, the big acts hit the strip midweek for CES shows, including Anderson .Paak at On the Record and Drake at XS at Wynn. Both of those are Wednesday night, January 8th. This weekend, you've got Tiesto and Lil Jon at Hakkasan, Tyga at Jewel, Dash Berlin at Marquee, Zedd at Omnia, and Kygo, Diplo, and the Chainsmokers at XS. Looks like that club wins for biggest CES week lineup. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Sun on the Strip. Please come back for more next week and consider subscribing at Apple Podcasts. You can also catch past episodes at the Las Vegas Sun's website by clicking on that little podcast button. You can reach me anytime at brock.radke@lasvegassun.com. Tweet me at brockvegas3 and follow along with everything I'm doing, Vegas shows, music, nightlife, food, and more. LasVegasSun.com/entertainment. Have a great week.